Leadership forums, staff retreats, self-help books, all of these urge us to lean in, to step up, to be our best self, to really take a seat at the table and to smash the glass ceiling. Invariably, the idea of the alpha comes up, the strong leader who will rise up and control. The Oxford Dictionary describes the alpha male as a dominant male animal in a particular group. There's a website, tobealpha.com, and alpha males believe, I quote, themselves to be, they're not afraid to show up physically, vocally, or through actions. Alpha males have swagger. They have pep in their step. They don't walk like an average man. They walk with meaning. They walk like they're in control and know where they're going. So the confidence and charisma of an alpha male can be quite captivating. Or there's also the flip side of an alpha male. They can be selfish, arrogant, destructive. But women are also able to be alphas. So we can have strong women that, again, like Sheryl Sandberg, that really take leadership positions in companies. They do challenge status quo, and I think these women are incredible, but there is a flip side, and you can probably guess. So there's a look at Bachelor, it's like 22 alpha women in a group that all just fight till the end. Real Housewives, any of those. So women as alphas can also wreak havoc in society, in their homes, in schools, in the workplace. So it's interesting just to look at the notion of where alpha came from. The term was first coined in 1940. It was a German biologist, actually. His name was Rudolf Schenkel, and he studied these wolves in a German zoo, and then he observed their behavior, and it was this whole hierarchy where the wolves would fight and they dominate, they try to sort of oppress the others, and then these alphas would emerge and people would line up, wolves would line up within the pack. It became popular with this gentleman behind, which is David Mech, and he wrote a book in 1970. It was called The Wolf and has this whole long title, which I won't bother with. But he basically used this whole idea of an alpha male and talked about this dominance. And it became incredibly popular. You can probably think of gym junkies with that, you know, alpha male kind of idea. It sort of became the catch cry for men to sort of rise up, be an alpha, don't be a beta, don't be a sheep, you need to really take charge. Here's the problem though, this is the rub. The animals that were studied weren't true to life. They were basically captive animals. So it's a little bit like looking at Big Brother and thinking that you can understand society by all these people put together. So there was this whole movement that basically they found that when you observe these animals in the wild, they're incredibly caring. There's this whole different dynamic that comes out. So there were two men that were really involved in understanding kind of the real presentation of the alpha. One was veteran wolf researcher Rick McIntyre. So he spent 20 years in Yellowstone National Park just going out and observing. He would have all of these wolves measured and they'd watch and they were completely wild. But for him, the main characteristic of an alpha wolf was the quiet confidence, quiet self-assurance. The leadership of the ranking male is not forced, not domineering, not aggressive to those on his team. They lead by example and they have a calming effect. So it doesn't mean that they're not able to be strong and rise up, but actually the wolf is part of a family. And I think that's what was really interesting, they're the father figure. They're not trying to dominate and to force. So I really want to use this as a bit of a construct to understand true leadership under the alpha analogy. So there's four points I'd love to talk about, which is the character of an alpha leader. Also the construct of leadership, and then having a look at the importance of a co-pilot and the context of this leadership. So come with me. Of course, our ultimate leader is Jesus. So there's no controversy. I'm middle of the pack, so I'm not going to rock the boat too much. Basically, we know that Jesus is that servant attitude and that whole idea. But what I think is really interesting is how that stacks up in a modern world, particularly a capitalist world. We all go into the workplace. How does humility look in the workplace? This seems weak. This doesn't seem right. Interestingly enough, There was a study that was done by this gentleman, Jim Collins. So he was a researcher, and he wrote this really well-respected article in the Harvard Business Review. It was 2001. But in 1996, he studied almost 1,500 companies, and out of all of those, he found 11 truly great companies. So what defined these companies was that year in, year out, they would make successive profit. There was client retention, there was growth. So out of all of those, there was just such a small fraction that were truly great. And then when he looked at the leadership, interesting enough, each of these companies had the same leadership style. And he found that these leaders have humility. They don't seek success for their own glory. Rather, success is necessary so that the team and the organization can thrive. They share credit for success, and they're the first to accept the blame for mistakes. And Collins also said that they're often shy, but they're fearless when it comes to making decisions, especially ones that most other people consider risky. So I love that, that it's not necessarily the extrovert. That's my 6 minutes. So. but it's really about people that maybe are more awkward socially, but they're actually able to really be fearless. And I think this extreme personal humility blends paradoxically with this incredible professional will. So just to stay with this idea, you don't need to read through that, but it's really interesting to have a little look at this level 5 leadership is what they've coined it. So there's levels 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then the idea is to be a level 5 leader. You basically look at yourself for any problems, whereas if you look for giving credit, you look out to the team. It's the idea that you're acting with calm determination, but also this unwavering will to do what it takes. So it's really playing with that idea that to be humble, but also to be incredibly strong. And you won't know any of these 11 people because they are so humble. It's really about giving glory to their team. So that's fine because that was one study, but actually going through the research, there's an incredible amount of research that actually points to this. More recently and closer to home, William Baker and then George O'Malley wrote this book, Leading with Kindness. So they also found that the practice of kindness and empathy had positive correlation with the profit of the business. So we're actually talking not just about a nice business, but a successful, profitable business. Christina Bojecka, is that how that looks German, Carmen, is that right? She was Australian School of Business, and again, she found that there was that correlation between all these characteristics and actually productivity. And then Jeff Aigner writing this book, Leadership Beyond Good Intentions. So there's certainly a lot of evidence about this. And Jim Collins basically gives us these 6 points that you really need to work on to actually become a level 5 leader. So it is about developing humility. It's about asking for help, for taking responsibility, develop discipline, find the right people, and then lead with passion. Point 2, so the construct of true leadership. So again, to go back to the wolf, if you look at the wolf, it's a pack, it's a family. If you look at the opposite, it's a herd. And when you think about a herd, the bison, for example, they're sort of in that pack mentality. It's fight or flight. There's no strategy. There's just everyone kind of doing their own thing. So very much, I think, leadership, good leadership creates a pack. And it's this idea of the central leader rather than it being even a hierarchy. There's an absolute authority, so even though this wolf is kind of kind and doesn't need to always step up, when he needs to, he's there, and I think that's the thing, no one challenges that absolute authority. There's one leader, and we'll find out as I go through, there's actually a second hierarchy as well that's happening in the pack. And then there's a unity around a common vision. So as a wolf, it's a family. As a team, for example, if it's the foodies team, there's this love of food. It's no point that you're in that team if you're really not interested in that. And I think that's what's really interesting. There's something that's connecting everyone in that group. So it might be that you're all, you love sport or something like that. So I think packs naturally form because there is some commonality. So I thought this was not too grotesque, but the idea I was looking at, just the strategy that happens in a pack. Everyone has a different role, and from A to B through to E, basically they all contribute different parts. So one of the wolves knows to sort of lead out the bison out of the pack, another one knows to take part of the leg. So before deteriorating into something too gruesome, it's quite clear that there is this strategy with the pack, whereas the bison just run. No one's in charge there, and they're just kind of really looking down, they're grazing, they run, they're spooked, people go everywhere. So again, I think leadership, teams without leadership can be like that. It's really important that everyone knows their part. The need for a co-pilot. So without doubt, Carmen is my co-pilot at work. And I think this is really interesting. It's the same in the wolf pack, that they realize that there's this male hierarchy, but there's this incredibly strong female hierarchy as well. And I have to read this because I think it's really, it's really incredible. But basically, that's the female that sets the tone. It's the female that actually makes all the decisions in the pack, and they are the ones that kind of do the heavy lifting. So I think that was just incredible to see that even though she does defer under the authority of the ultimate alpha wolf, she actually is the one that's setting the tone. And I think if I think about it in my home setting, I'm the co-pilot in that scenario. So I'm very much boss lady at work, and I'm very happy to take that role. But I know Carmen is the one that actually runs our business for us, and I'm the one that's very involved in curating all of the content. But for me, my role is working out what our business relationship is with other businesses and what's our direction. So a lot of strategic direction with our business. Carmen looks after what's happening within our walls. So she's the one that actually holds the relationships with our clients and with our staff. So for me, I've got a different focus, but then if I flip it and I come home, I do all the heavy lifting at home. And so I think there's no difference about what's more important. I think both are really essential. And I feel that in the home, I'm the one that holds the key relationships. I'm the one that actually kind of sets the tone. So I think both are quite strong positions. And I do describe Carmen as the clutch plate for our business, because it's very much about, you know, I guess I'm steering, and then Carmen's really engaging the vision with the mechanics of our team. And I think she's a very lovely looking clutch plate. So I do like this picture as well of the wolves. It's so beautiful, but I think it's the idea of someone with vision, but someone, the co-pilot is actually watching and protecting the back of that person. So I think in leadership, it's really important to think about who's your co-pilot, because it's great to sort of have that leadership role, but you almost need someone to set the tone of the team and to connect your vision with what's happening. And then lastly, the context of leadership. So there's different roles in different settings. So like I've shared, I'm a leader or a co-pilot. In socially, I might be more of someone that's actually participating. So I think, you think about different scenarios and different roles that you play, and that's all very relevant. And for us, just acknowledging that there is an ultimate authority. So we all come under that authority of God, and in the workplace as well, I think that you can have leaders that aren't great. But again, you do need to come under the authority of God. And I do apply this. I've talked to Toby about it in my home, because my husband doesn't go to church, but I almost just have to acknowledge him as the head of my house. But I know that I have the ultimate kind of authority unto God. So it's sort of an interesting one. And the other thing that I love is the continuity of leadership, that it's all about raising up other people, but also being mentored as well. So making sure that you're plugging in. And Toby did that great sermon about the cornerstone, and kind of making sure that we're sort of building this really strong structure. That's how I'm ending. Jesus is Alpha, the ultimate Alpha and Omega.